My name is Bill Schaberg, and I'm the author of Writing the Big Book, The Creation of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are listening to Rebellion Dogs Radio.
When are you and Bill Schaberg going to do another podcast together, Joe? All right, that's what we have for episode 74 of Rebellion Dogs Radio. Now and always, recovery, substance use disorder, mental health, with less dogma and more bite. So what are Bill and Joe going to talk about today? Since we met years ago at an AA history symposium, we've talked quite a bit. Today, we'll talk about some AA history. We're going to talk about 12-step culture. And mostly, it's one alcoholic talking to another, our experiences today and through the years. So thanks for joining us. Bill and I recently brought some of our research together and a lot of our speculation into the culture of AA then and now. As you may know, Bill Wilson wrote There Is a Solution and his own story, which we call Chapters 1 and 2 of Alcoholics Anonymous. In another sitting, he wrote More About Alcoholism and We Agnostics. And then what we see in the book is Chapters 5 and 6, How It Works Into Action. The chapter is all about the 12 suggested steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's not what Bill Wilson wrote next. After his own story, More About Alcoholism, There Is a Solution, and We Agnostics, he wrote Working with Others. And Bill Schaberg gives significant thought to how and why Bill Wilson may have felt, I'm done here. This book is done. The problems described, there's talk about psychic change or a spiritual experience, how that can be a catalyst to change and recovery, and the need to talk to others, to work with other people with alcohol use disorder. Yes, there were going to be more member stories included in the book. They were already being written at the time. There was still a plan to have something for families and employers. Even A Vision for You was written before any attention or thought was given to this 12 step-by-step process. But most of what we're going to talk about today is our own recovery in and out of our regular meetings, how AA culture has changed over time, and how it may or may not change in the future. We'll jump right in. I've got one announcement. It's a response to queries I've had about the third printing, the 10th anniversary of Beyond Belief, Agnostic Musings for 12-Step Life. So that's coming out in 2013, 10 years after the first one. There's a new preface. A lot's happened in 10 years. A whole lot of data had to be updated with demographic and contextual information that all has been updated. There's a hardcover book added to the paperback and ebook offerings. It'll be out in 2023. It just requires a last edit layout, and then the new files will replace the old files. Second printing will be retired, and the third printing will take over and be available wherever you get your books. Now, let's get to Coffee Talk with Joe C. and Bill Schaberg. Bill, we were talking a little bit earlier, and I said, you know, we should have pressed record because we talked about some interesting ideas, speculation, of course, but I think ideas worth sharing with a larger audience. And both you and I have, since you've written your book, since we first sat down and recorded our first interview, which you were saying, you know, people still to this day are telling me, hey, I just heard this interview with you and Joe. And I get that too. I mean, it's still getting, you know, dozens of plays a day, right? After that was before the book came out.
2019, of course.
Exactly. And interestingly, I had you read a little excerpt out of the book because this, I thought, was a very curious point. And it was about the most critical and important juncture of the story, because nothing is more central to the book Alcoholics Anonymous than the program of recovery outlined in the 12 steps. And there are, unfortunately, no primary documents mentioning the actual writing of the steps. It is an unexpected gap in an otherwise rich archival record that provides a robust and vital picture of early AA history. And that's an assumption, that the central part of AA is the 12-step program, that is the secret sauce that joins 2 million people around the world today and millions that have come before us. But is it? How vital are the 12 steps? And the most curious thing I found about your writing was that chapter 5 and chapter 6 were done at the 11th hour and then fit in. I'm going to ask you to explain as best you can why the chapters are in the order they are. And I think editorial influence had a lot to do with it. Bill Wilson probably had a say in it. But there they are in the middle. I remember being in early recovery and I thought, how it works, chapter 5, like they would read the little excerpt, the little one-sheeter on how it works that includes the steps at some of the meetings I went to. Some meetings didn't read the steps at all. But I thought, chapter 5, you know, why is that like chapter, why isn't that chapter 1? now you're going to tell us how it works. So can you just sort of review for listeners who are just joining in on this story, the story of how these chapters were written and then the final order they ended up in?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Joe. Bill Wilson started writing on May 20th, 1938, and in the beginning he wrote two chapters. He wrote his own story, Bill's story, and then he wrote a chapter titled There Is a Solution. And he didn't write anything else for the next 3 months. He really wrote those two chapters so that they could use them as door openers to get appointments with rich people in New York City. They were hoping to donate hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to these projects they had going, the projects where they were looking to put a string of alcoholic hospitals all across the country. And they needed a whole bunch of paid missionaries to start meetings in around the country and to bring patients into those hospitals. And it wasn't until May, though, after that hadn't been working out too well for 7 or 8 months, that they thought, okay, well, but if we had two chapters of this book we're talking about, but we haven't done anything about, we had two chapters, we'd be able to get some really good appointments with these people, and it would show them what we're talking about. And so Wilson writes these two chapters. He doesn't write anything else for 3 months. And then 3 months later, Parkhurst, his right-hand man, comes up with this idea that they can get a magazine article placed in a Sunday supplement that goes into 5 million newspapers across the United States of America every Sunday. And in the article, he's going to say, listen, if you send us a buck, we'll send you some chapters from our upcoming book. We're doing this book and we'll have this. And then he goes to Bill Wilson and he says, Bill, they're going to want more than two chapters for their buck. I need like 5 chapters. So Bill Wilson starts writing again. And he writes the rest of the book between September 15th and December 31st. He's done with his first draft of the book in 3.5 months. So the first two chapters he writes when he starts on September 15th are more about alcoholism and we agnostics. Now there's a real logic to that jumped out at me when I was doing this kind of deep research here. If you look at There Is a Solution, there's very, very clear stuff there about the diagnosis, Bill Wilson's diagnosis of the alcoholic's problem. If you're a real alcoholic, you have no defense against the first drink. No defense. That's his definition of the real alcoholic, is the guy who has no defense against first drink. He's got these strange mental blank spots. No matter how many promises he makes, he's going to bang one. If you're a real alcoholic, sooner or later, no booze in your body. No booze in your body. We're not talking about Dr. Silkworth's, you know, phenomenon of craving that comes on after you take the first drink. We're talking about no booze in your body. You pick up the first drink. That's the problem. And you got no defense against that. But then he says, and there is a solution. Well, actually, there is a solution. If you get yourself what Dr. Jung says, a vital spiritual experience, it's going to stand, a good chance it's going to stand between you and a drink. So I consider those the two very foundational basic principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we're selling in Alcoholics Anonymous is. Here's our diagnosis and here's our solution. And the rest of it's just conversation and elaboration on those two things. So those are the basic, and both of those things are very, very clearly articulated in There is a Solution. So when he writes the next two chapters, what's he do? He writes more about alcoholism. What's more about alcoholism about? It's all about the diagnosis. It's all about the diagnosis. You got no defense against the first one. You got the man of 30 who doesn't drink for a long time, and then he drinks, kills himself drinking. Jim puts the whiskey in his milk, and the jaywalker, of course, is as crazy as it gets. How crazy? Doesn't it sound familiar, though, folks, this craziness? Doesn't it sound familiar? And then, of course, Fred goes to New York and decides that, I mean, just have a little cocktail with dinner, you know? And those stories and that whole chapter is all about this diagnosis that Wilson had already offered in There Is a Solution, that if you're a real alcoholic, you have these strange mental blank spots and you got no defense against the first drink. Sooner or later, you're going to pick up a drink. The next chapter he writes is We Agnostics. That's all about the solution, the spiritual solution that Bill Wilson is offering in as something that's going to stand between you and the first drink. And of course, that's a very 1938 middle-class American Christian offering that he gives us there. You know, I mean, I've talked and I write in my book about the fact that there's a couple of basic presumptions that until you make those basic presumptions in your head, it's hard to make any sense out of reading that chapter. Well, what are the two basic presumptions? Oh, Wilson presumes that you got to have this spiritual awakening, but Wilson presumes that spiritual equals God and God equals spiritual. That's the first presumption. That's, if you want to get spiritual, you need God. Oh, and he's all about, you know, you do any God you want, but when you read between the lines or just even read the black parts on the page, what he's really, really saying is you can believe in any providential God you want. That's a very Abrahamic Western God. That's a God that you can pray to and get help from. That's his solution. You got to get yourself a higher power. One of my friends said to me, he doesn't say highest power, does he? He says higher power. But anyhow, it's you got to get yourself a higher power. And that higher power has to be somebody you can pray to, have a personal relationship with, and you can pray to and get help from. Going to help you. So that's now we got the chapter of There Is a Solution, which is diagnosis and solution. And then we've got a chapter on the diagnosis. Then we got a chapter on the solution. So I was asked by my friend Alan down in Virginia to do a monthly presentation on the backstory and the history of each chapter of the big book. And I started that last year. And he wanted me to do the first two forwards. I did that. So then I did the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, There Is a Solution, more about alcoholism. And I got to just before November, and I had gotten to the point where I'd promised to do four brand new presentations in 5 weeks. And I burned myself out completely. And I took a vacation, and I said, Alan, I'm going to get back to this sometime, but I'm done. You know, I got to go recoup. And just recently, probably about a month ago, I put up the one about We Agnostics up online. I have a YouTube page, Bill Schaeberg YouTube page. And there's like, I don't know, 12 or 14 presentations that I've done about early A history up there at the moment. But anyhow, I put that one up there. So then I started on the next one. Now, the next one, if I'm doing them in historical order, as you pointed out, isn't chapter 5 and chapter 6. Those are the last two chapters that get written in the whole process. Bill doesn't write chapter 5 and 6 until December, after he writes the 12 steps, which don't get written until the first week of December. So you can't write 5 and 6 if you don't know what the 12 steps are. So those are obviously and clearly and undeniably the last two chapters written. So the next thing I'm going to write about after We Agnostics isn't 5 and 6, it's number 7, Working with Others. And there's a real logic to that too, from Bill Wilson's point of view in late 1938. What are we doing here? Well, what does it say? The first couple of sentences in that chapter say, you know, what we found out was, when that whole understanding the diagnosis, and by the way, maybe you had a white light, even a white light experience, you know, but when all of those things fail to keep you away from the first drink, what the best solution, the best thing you can possibly do is to work with another alcoholic. And and I think it's really, really important that in the Multilith copy, the book was published on April 10th, 1939. The Multilith came out in late February, 2 months earlier of 1939. In the first version of that, it says, when all other spiritual solutions fail. It doesn't say when all other solutions fail.
Wow.
All other spiritual solutions fail. So it's actually saying, you know, all that stuff we just talked about in There Is a Solution and More About Alcoholism and We Agnostics, you know about all that stuff? That's not foolproof. But let me tell you what is, and the best thing we got to foolproof is when that stuff doesn't work, work with another alcoholic. So I'm about 2/3 of the way through that presentation in PowerPoint at the moment. And when I get it done, if and when I get it done, we'll do a showing of it and we'll put it up online and people will be able to see it. But what you're talking about was, you and I talk with some regularity and I start digging into this chapter and comes to the front of my brain in a way it hadn't before. I mean, holy smokes. He was done with this chapter sometime in November. And I, probably late September, October sometime. And I'm thinking to myself, I'll bet you that when Bill Wilson finished Working with Others, he thought he was done.
What about A Vision for You?
That comes much later.
No kidding, does it? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. As far as I can tell, A Vision for You is the last thing written in November before the 12 steps come out.
Okay.
So, but he's got these, so now he's got a chapter with a diagnosis and a solution, a chapter with a diagnosis, a chapter with a solution, and oh, by the way, this is our fail-safe solution. When all else fails, this is what you do. You work with another alcoholic. And it just, all of a sudden, I realized that I think this is speculation on my part, but I'm really confident about this. It feels right to me. My stomach just goes, boom, you know, yeah, that's what happened. Wilson got finished with Working with Others, and he thought he was basically done with writing about what was needed for you to understand about your disease and what you needed to do about it. And then if that didn't work, then you need to do this other thing about it. And that's how we're staying sober. That's what we're doing. We're doing that kind of stuff. And I was just knocked out by that thought, you know, and he actually says in his letters to Dr. Bob, he says, at one point he says, you know, I've just got a couple of more general chapters to write and then I'll come out there in early December. Now, of course, he never gets out there in early December. He doesn't get to Akron until March of 1939, for God's sakes. But, you know, I take that to mean that he thought he had, you know, the Tiffany blue box with the bow on it. It was a done deal, you know, and all he had to do was, then he had to write to Wives and the family afterwards. And by the way, Hank was writing Employers. And then we had to do A Vision for You. And we're done. We're done. And he got all finished. Now, this is, again, my speculation. But it makes perfect sense in terms of the chronology of the writing of these things that we know for a fact. Because we've got these letters going back and forth between him and Bob. So I think he got it all finished at the end of November. And by this time, Hank's hired two editors, and he's saying to him, you know, he's going to be finished with this thing in just a couple of weeks, early December. He's going to be finished with it.
Yeah.
We'll give it to you. But I think late November, first few days of December, Bill Wilson was looking at that package and thinking, you know what? Alcoholics are just sneaky, slippery people, man. And we need something a lot more specific, a lot more directive. Now, of course, the whole writing of the book up to the Multilith was hugely directive. It wasn't we suggestion. It was you better damn well do this stuff. So I think he looked at that and he thought, there's just not enough direction here. And then he sits down. And of course, I know that you know that my this, you know, he always says, well, we had the six steps and I broke them down and I ended up with 12. And it was like, oh, wasn't that a nice number? But that story doesn't have any credibility with me at all. And I've written about that and I've done PowerPoint presentations about that, you know, the myth of the six steps. But that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
The point is that the last two chapters written were 5 and 6, and they were triggered. They were just blowed up exposition of what it said in the 12 steps. You know, he says, you know, we've already told you about what our problem was, and we got all these stories and blah, blah, blah. So that's all taken care of. And then he goes, so now we're at step 3, because we've already covered 1 and 2 in those earlier.
Yeah.
Chapters.
Chapter 5 starts at step 3. Yeah.
Dang. And it only goes to 11.
Yeah.
So then when you get finished with 11 at the end of chapter 6, he takes working with others, which is the middle part of the 12th step, and he shoehorns it right in there. He puts it in right afterwards, which leaves hanging with no direct writing about it in the big book. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps and practicing these principles in all our affairs. Now, I know people who go through the book and just pick out these sentences and say, oh, well, it was covered in this and in their two wives and in their family afterwards. And here it is here. This is what working with others is about. It's like, yeah, I get that. And what I disdainfully call the AA word police come out,
yeah.
You know, and they start pulling these things apart because they know it's in there someplace. It's got to be in there because it's in the steps and covered everything else. So how could he have not covered? So he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing, and he covered all that stuff. No, he didn't. Sorry.
Yeah, I'll borrow from Jonathan Haidt, who writes about the brain as not being a truth-seeking instrument, but a bias-confirming instrument. So all of these orthodox police are really not trying to find evidence to enlarge their view of things. They're looking to confirm what they already know, as all of us do to some degree.
And Joe, we all do that, but what we need to be doing as human beings is trying to keep as open a mind as possible, because you know what, I've done two presentations on more has been revealed, because people keep telling me things, that finding documents that I didn't know about and telling me things and giving me a perspective on things that I never had before.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Here's a perfect example of this thing. This idea that Wilson thought he was done describing the program of recovery of Alcoholics Anonymous when he had finished what is today chapter 7 and had not even thought of or conceived of chapter 5 and 6, that he thought he was done. That was a new thought to me. But when I thought about it, it was like, I was open to it. I was open to it at least to some degree. I mean, I love finding new things that I can go to my friends like you and say, hey, listen, I was just thinking, I was just reading all this stuff and I read this and I read that and that put together. And let me tell you what I'm thinking about that. And then sometimes I just get shot down. I get smacked with a 2x4 and they say, come on, Shaver, you know, you didn't pay attention to this and pay attention to that. I'm going, okay, yeah, you're right. But sometimes we need to be open, as opposed to being, as you say, the closed-minded. We're just looking for confirmation of what we already think. And we're going to do everything possible to discover how that is true with a capital T.
Yeah. The one ultimate truth. Now, along with his what would have been 5 chapters, he was at the time soliciting other stories. In fact, correct me if I'm wrong, he never intended his story to be at the beginning. He intended his to be at the back with the rest of the AA stories.
That is correct. His story was going to be the first one.
Yeah.
And they're actually kind of chronological in terms of the people getting sober. You know, the ones in the back are you know, Dr. Bob and Hank Parkhurst and, you know, those guys, followed by Fitz Mayo. You know, it's just kind of follows a chronology. Yeah.
So it was going to be this narrative, and the bulk of the book would have ended up being, you know, just one alcoholic talking to another, right? People telling their story.
Yeah, well, taking Bill's story and putting it in the back, it would certainly have been a majority of stories. I don't know what the page count is at the moment. I know that when in the multilith, it was like 76 pages in the front and 74 pages in the back or something like that. But yeah. Bill's, that was with Bill's story in the front. If they took Bill's story and popped it in the back, there would have been more pages in the back for sure than in the front. Absolutely.
And for people who are just joining us, none of those stories in the first edition were a step-by-step 1 through 12 account of their recovery. There's mention of, you know, finding God or some other form of a higher power in some cases, outright rejecting it as Jim Burwell did, but he could still see, you know, the higher good or, you know, his higher self. And but his story didn't make the first cut.
No, not at all. Jimmy was an atheist and they knew he was going to drink. So they didn't want a story in the book of somebody who was just going to drink right shortly afterwards. Not only is there no account of anybody doing anything remotely resembling the 12 steps, except in Bill Wilson's story.
Right.
You can go through Bill Wilson's story and put numbers in the margin, 1 through 9 and 11, and then A, B, C on 12. I mean, it's all, the 12 steps are in Bill's story. And amazing to me, this was another one of those lightning bolt moments. I'm sitting in the GSO archive doing research on this book, and Michelle hands me the typescript of the original Bill story before it gets edited and all that stuff. Now I know in my big book, I've got all the steps numbered. They're all right. They're almost all there. 10's not there, but everything else is really just right there. Yeah. So I'm reading this document, and I know it was written in late May of 1938. And I also know the 12 steps are right there in this story. And I was like, I always thought we had to wait till December to get the 12 steps. But you know what? If you read this story, they're right here. But nobody else's story mentions the 12 steps. Nobody else's story mentions 9 of the 12 steps. Nobody else's story mentions the 6 steps that supposedly preceded in Alcoholics Anonymous the right. 12 steps of December 1938. Nobody does that. You're right. People and Jimmy's story and, you know, alternate higher power options don't show up until the second and third and fourth editions of our book. But in the beginning, everybody's finding God, or specifically they say Jesus. They literally say Jesus a couple of times because you know what? That's what they were doing. I mean, for them, God was a code word for Jesus. I mean, they're all Christians, you know, they talk about the Bible where we, you know, one guy's report about coming into AA in February of 1937, about the first meeting he goes to, and Bill Dodson, AA number 3, is there, and he's reading from the Bible. Yeah, he's reading from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's what he's doing. He might be doing some epistles that day just as a little flavor enhancer, differences, you know, get a little Pauline Christianity in there. But aside from that, you know, these guys are Christians. They're doing the Oxford Group, and the Oxford Group is a first century Christian organization, which it wasn't the first century Christian organization, but it was certainly the biggest and most recent one. And all those guys are trying to do is to get away from all those dogmatic fights. You know, let's live Christian lives is what they're trying to do. This is a great model to be shooting for. You know, I mean, it really, really is. Then let's lead Christian lives. Let's not argue about the Trinity. Let's not talk about transubstantiation and what's in the bread. And we're not going to argue about any of that stuff. Let's just try and live good Christian lives. They go by, as John says, by this shall they know that you are my disciples, that you love one another. Boom. There's a yardstick we could all be using, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's, working with others.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, since you blew up a few of the coffee pot AA myths stories, most of them started from Bill Wilson, and you or I, if we were describing, a seminal turning point in our lives, you know, 15 years ago, we might not get all the details exactly right either. I mean, that's the human condition. But since you sort of shone a light on the fact that the bedtime stories we've all been told and told each other, because I've repeated them, and some of them were put to print in AA comes of age, of course. But the documents you looked at told another story, that's not exactly what happened at all. And so we've been talking about that since you've written the book, and all of us have sort of thought, well, what about this and what about that? And you know, I wrote an essay on where did he get the idea of a list of 12 from? And what else would he have been reading? Right in chapter 5, you see Richard Peabody's, half measures avail us nothing, an idea taken directly out of The Common Sense of Drinking, a popular book with all AAs at the time. And what else were all AAs reading? Well, you know, the New York Times bestseller list included Think and Grow Rich and How to Win Friends and Influence People. And both of those books are new thought books, just like AA is. And they're spiritually oriented. They're not completely secular. They're about living in accordance with, you know, a higher purpose. And they certainly have that new thought approach to religion, where we're not talking about Protestantism or any particular school of monotheism. So that they're wide open there, but they sure love their lists. You know, 13 ways to this, 12 ways to that, the 6 basic principles of so-and-so. And the Think and Grow Rich author, Napoleon Hill, even tells his rags to riches, back to rags again story, very similar to Bill Wilson, where he was searching for a purpose when he couldn't buy his family Christmas presents. And he was down and out because of the Depression. So they lived a very similar story, born about the same time, died about the same time. And you report in your book that Bill Wilson actually, according to Lois's diary, went to sort of hone his, you know, speaking skills to some of the Dale Carnegie presentations.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, Joe, that's another one of those, you know, you get a little light bulb going here. You know, when you first told me about those two books and their popularity, I know about their popularity, but when you connected that with this is the air that Bill Wilson was breathing at the time, you know, this was so deeply ingrained in the culture. I mean, that How to Win Friends and Influence People sold millions of copies. And I mean, everybody read it. Everybody talked about it. Everybody read it, and it was part of the, as I say, the air that these people breathe. So when you kind of pulled that out and said, you know, everybody's looking at Emmett Fox, and they're looking at Peabody, and they're looking at all these other alcohol and spiritual things, but how about these two guys? And I was like, oh yeah, I never thought of that before. So thank you, Joe. It's not just an interesting contribution. It's not just an intro. It's an important contribution to what we need to understand about what was going on at the time. I've told you this all the time. Ernie Kurtz, who was my mentor, beloved Ernie Kurtz, the curmudgeon Ernie Kurtz, would just beat me over the head all the time about context, 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 context. He was just always, what's the context here? Or you're not looking at the context that produced this, you know, this sort of thing. And what you've done very, very recently with this focus on how to think and grow rich and the Dale Carnegie stuff is just like, it's like bringing it, like, that's a new perspective. We need to be paying attention to that perspective, because by God, those people certainly knew all about it. And it was part of their mental framework about how they operated in the world, how they thought about things. Yeah. Good job.
You planted the seed, you know, understanding that the steps hadn't been written until the 11th hour and they were shoehorned into the book. Just made me think, well, and then the stories sort of, you know, reflecting one alcoholic talking to another by example, you know, demonstrating what academics call pro-social behavior, which is sticking with the winners, right? People who are dealing with their problems sober and thriving in their recovery, not white knuckling in their sobriety. And reading these stories of other people who have not only overcome alcoholism, but are better off today than they were before. There's no past glory to reclaim because they're doing far better. Thank you very much. And so what was it then? Taking that Ernie Kurtz context idea, well, what was going on? The idea of Hank and Bill wanting to make money, wanting to help alcoholics, looking for a pathway to success, you know, how could they not be impressed by the 10 pages in Reader's Digest that these books were getting and the buzz around the room? I can't see how it wouldn't be an influencing factor. But the argument is AA the steps, is AA the program. It really depends what you were brought up on. Because when they say these are the steps that the first 100 members took, we know that's not true. But it's not untrue that these are the steps that the most recent 100 AA members took, because it's now ingrained into our culture, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I was off with a friend of mine talking to a longtime AA guy who was very well connected at the GSO office over the years, and he loves to shock people. And at one point he said at lunch, he said, well, you know, AA is built on a big lie. And I was like, built on a big lie? He's baiting me. I know he's baiting me, you know, so I'm trying to figure out where to go with this, but he's not letting anything go. Finally, I said, so what's the big lie? And he said, it says it right there. He says, so these are the steps we took as our program of recovery. He said, nobody did those steps when he wrote that. That's a big lie. And the whole thing is based on a big lie. Now, I get it. I mean, he's looking for a little bit of power punch there, you know, and he got it. He got it because I couldn't argue with him and say, oh, no, that's not true. They were actually doing it, or they were actually doing six of them. You know, I couldn't do any of that stuff because you know what? They weren't doing those things. It's not the program of recovery that we, you know, we've all done and we're offering to you now, because the 100 of us all did it. And look at how cool we're doing, you know. When he said AA was based on a big lie, I was like, I knew I was going to have to walk into that trap, and I did. And it was a fun day at lunch that day.
You're not the type of person that is looking for fault like there's a reward for it. Like Bill Wilson said this, and it's not true, aha, because you see him as someone who truly loved fellow alcoholics. And, you know, he wasn't trying to be a historian and categorize everything and catalog it properly and preserve it in the integrity in which it happened. He's a pragmatist, a storyteller.
Yeah. Parables and myths are right up his alley, and he's just not trying to do history. And you're right. I had a guy come through here, and he went to Stepping Stones. He went to the GSO archive, and he came and visited me. And he's supposedly writing this big article, and he's telling me, you know, that Bill Wilson was a liar. He was really a liar. He was telling all these lies. I was like, dude, that's not what's going on here. You know, you can't be going there, you know, because you really don't have a leg to stand on if you look at what's happening in the time and in the place and what he's trying to do. You know, I mean, my book starts off blowing up the kitchen table story. When Abby comes and sits across the kitchen, Bill answers the phone and Abby comes over and they sit there and Bill's drinking and Abby's sober. And I got religion and blah, 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 blah. Then you look at Abby's version of the story and it's like completely different details. I mean, there's extra people involved and just completely different details. The reason, in my opinion, Bill Wilson was looking for an impactful story. Abby's story is a messy story. There's the lady upstairs comes down for dinner and she's upstairs when he's telling his story about getting sober with the Oxford group, blah, 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 all that stuff. Bill's story is really clear and it contains the very, very seed of what is the motive thing for success in Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill's story is all about you can successfully deliver the message when one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic. That's the point of that story. That's the point of that story. But if you throw the woman upstairs and Lois into it, and they they're all having dinner, and then they go upstairs and talk, it's just you miss the point of the story. So bang, he just takes it down into something much tighter and much more forceful in terms of presenting the impact that he wants to give you. I mean, I think all of our stories tend to sharpen up over the years. You know, my sponsor used to say that he loved to hear somebody speak when they were 6 months sober or 9 months sober, because you got all the messy details, you know. Yeah. And he would always tell the story about Harry or some guy he heard when he was in Chicago. And when he was 6 months sober, he told a story for the first time. And in that story, he was angry at his wife and he threw the cat out the window, a third story window in an apartment in Chicago. He said, when Harry was telling his story when he was 5 years sober, the cat wasn't anywhere in the story at all anymore. You know, it had been cleaned up and tightened up into a much more, again, to deliver a message. You know, we're trying to help people get sober here, you know, and it's just like, I hit the high points of what worked for me, as opposed to those kind of things like throwing a cat out the window that probably didn't work with his wife at all.
How do you see AA as a culture? Would you describe AA as a book-based society? How dependent are we? And of course, every meeting's different, right? We're not McDonald's. It's not the same menu at every meeting you go to. Yeah. It's not the same reading rituals. It's not the same culture. It's not the same crowd, right? That, you know, so there's no the there. There's no the way AA is there. But do you consider us a book-based culture, following these instructions exactly as laid out in the big book, blah, blah, blah? Or would you describe us more as a fellowship of peers, one alcoholic talking to another?
Well, it's an interesting question. And you're right, there's no McDonald's sort of thing. I mean, I live in Fairfield, Connecticut. Next town over is Westport. And we always make fun of Westport meetings. You know, it seems like nobody over there has a sponsor. They all come to meetings and dump all their crap at the meetings, you know? And we're much more step-oriented in Fairfield. You know, we're not talking in the next state or the other side of the country, we're talking in the next town. So it's different everywhere. Certainly, when I came in late in 1981, the first 20 years of my sobriety were fellowship. That's what it was. Nobody was talking the book. Nobody was reading the book. Mm-hmm. I had to twist my sponsor's arm to do a 5 months sober. I did a fourth and a fifth step, and that was basically it for the steps. You know, they weren't pushing the steps at all.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I was 19 years sober that I realized it might be interesting for me to read a book. And I tried to read the book, the big book, and I couldn't make any sense out of it. I had lost my solo skill set for doing those kind of things. So I started a big book reading meeting. And we read the big book a page or a page and a half every Saturday for a decade. And it was really, really, I learned a lot. It was great. And then we started a step work group in my area in 2003. That's where 10 people get together and they basically go through the steps. They go through the steps as a group and they kind of hold each other's feet to the fire. I was at a meeting last night, Wednesday night, and one of the guys in the meeting he was in a step work group and he had done the whole thing. He'd done his fourth step, but here's 4 months later, he never did his fifth step. And they're all like, What's that all about? Because when you're in a step work group, as I've written the guide for the step work group, when you're in my step work group, you make an appointment with your sponsor to do the fifth step within the 7 days after you finish your fourth step. That's what you do. Yeah. No, and they're all like, how did you miss that, dude? You know, what was that all about? And in relation to the book versus the fellowship thing, I hate to steal my friend Jim's thunder here, but he was saying, you know, it seems to me that this whole focus on the big book didn't really come out and start rolling the way it is today until the mid-80s. And he says, I think that was driven by Joe and Charlie. I think they started that and it's spread and spread and spread since then. And he was looking at evidence. I told Jimmy should be doing some interesting primary document research to look at this, but certainly my sponsor, who got sober in 1956, I come in, he's 20, 25 years sober. He'd never really done the steps. They weren't doing the steps. And he'd been in Oklahoma City and he'd been in Chicago and he'd been in Fairfield and, you know, he'd been all over the place. No, they weren't doing that kind of thing. My men's home group, our mantra was, don't drink, go to meetings, keep your hands in your pocket and your mouth shut. That was it.
And this was an era where AA was growing in leaps and bounds.
Yeah. You know, people ask me, if it's a spiritual solution, Jay Berg, and you have no supernatural elements in your life, how does that work? To me, my definition of the spiritual involves other people. I mean, it's all about me being less than and more than, more a part of rather than separate from. It's all on a spectrum, you know? And there's days where I'm all by myself and I think I'm the only goddamn thing that counts in the entire world. So my spirituality, what I think of as my spirituality, is very much on a spectrum. But I want to spend more time in the inclusive side, in the being a part of side, than being isolated and off by myself kind of side. I mean, I found out that does not work. There's not a big RO in the return on investment for that kind of thing. I think there is when I'm in the middle of that, because I think, you know, it's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. But that's a recipe for disaster, not just for an alcoholic, but for a human being.
It was my little secret to quit drinking plenty of times before I found sobriety. And I didn't find sobriety until I was surrounded in a community of peers all doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And
let me help you do that. Let me help you do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Wednesday night, this guy who hadn't done his fifth step, he was moving out of a sober house after a year for living with his, going into his dad's house, and somebody was moving out of his, dad was moving out for a month going to Alaska. And I said, how much, he said his father was a drinker. I said, is there any booze in your father's house? And he did a little double take, you know, and then he said, well, yeah, there's beer in the refrigerator. I said, you know, a real alcoholic has no defense against the first drink. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, if there's beer in the refrigerator, it's a different situation. If there's no beer in the refrigerator, you need to get the beer out of the refrigerator. And there was a good friend of his who's been sober a long time at this particular meeting. And I said, and that guy over there will go with you tonight, because you shouldn't be doing this alone. You don't want to do this alone. He'll go with you tonight and help you get rid of that beer. And somebody was saying, well, you know, it's your father's beer. You can't just throw it out. I was like, it's your sobriety or pissing off your father. Go piss your father off. Get rid of the beer, you know? Anyhow.
And that's one alcoholic talking to another, right?
That's how we help each other in very concrete ways. It's not because we got this cerebral wisdom, you know, guru crap that we're passing along. It's like, it's got to be that kind of concrete thing. Get the beer out of the house and go with that. Make sure that guy comes with you and helps you do it, because you should not be doing that alone.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing we're talking about. That's how we get sober and stay sober together, is by getting in each other's back pockets, I think, you know?
But someone who got sober in the 1990s or the early this century would be shocked to hear. So how long were you sober when you read the big book for the first time?
I actually, they gave it to me when I was in High Watch, when I was, you know, 8 days sober, and I read it at High Watch, and I never read it again until I was 19 years sober.
19 years. Yeah. And I didn't even like read anything more than a pamphlet or a chapter at a time of Living Sober. Maybe a daily reflection book, that kind of thing, right? For the first decade of my sobriety, it wasn't until I found myself trying to fit in a like a 12 and 12 or a big book type of AA community, because I moved a lot when I was young in my sobriety. So I come to a new town, like I got sober in Montreal. That's a all speaker meeting town, a few discussion groups here and there. So it's all one alcoholic talking to another, right? You know, and a coffee talk afterwards. And when I went to Calgary, smaller meetings around the table, reading the 12 and 12 one step at a time, right? And that became like a repetitive strain disorder for me. But, you know, it was the environment that I had to sort of adopt to. They weren't glad to see me. Joe, show us how they do it in Montreal. No one cared about that. And then I moved to Toronto, and I was still young enough that I was in my mid-20s, involved in the young people scene. And we weren't, kneeling at the altar of AA history. We were trying to widen the gateway and, you know, try to help more people. What, you know,
trying to make history, not study.
Yeah, exactly right. And then when I outgrew that, I had to sort of, you know, I didn't want to be the old creepy dude in the young people's group. So, you know, I found my way into mainstream AA, to which I was already a community member. And it was a lot of these book reading meetings. And so you know, now I'm 10 years sober and I'm reading the big book, which to me, I didn't believe when I heard something like chapter five being read, you know, the how it works little insert. There were two things going on. One, that was, you know, I'm from Canada, right? That's sort of Americana, right? That's what they believed then. I didn't believe anybody else in the room while they were honoring this little bit of history believed literally what was being said. But you come into a you know, thumper type meeting in this century, and the narrative is, of course, this is exactly how the first 100 members, and they had a 75% success rate and watered down recovery now with reading this other crap and all of this trigger talk and the other sort of treatment center lingo is destroying AA. And against no set of facts, you go, oh, really? Well, how could we get back to this 75? But that's all made up stuff that no one ever did any research on. They just believed the stories they were told and repeated them, you know, like family legends and that sort of
thing. Urban myths.
Urban myths, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I've been to that whole reading of chapter five, the first 2.5 pages of chapter five, just really, I don't go to meetings where they do that. I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had been going to meetings where they, and most of the meetings in our area do that. I mean, when I go to meetings, I go to 4 meetings a week. Actually, these days I'm going to 5 meetings a week. But I mean, I've been a 4 meeting a week guy forever. So that means I've been somewhere between 8 and 9 or maybe even 10,000 meetings. And if I had to listen to chapter 5, 8,000 times, 4 times a week, I would have put my head in the oven before I was 5 years sober. I mean, it's just come on, you know? And people do it all the time. And they, one of the things I love doing is pointing out, I said, so have you actually read the first paragraph? Have you noticed the fact that the one thing Bill Wilson says in that paragraph, there's one thing you have to have if you're going to have a chance of getting sober. What's the one thing? And they're all like, I don't know.
Honesty.
Rigorous honesty. That's what he talks about. He could have talked about all kinds of things in that first chapter that he wanted to hit with a hammer, nail right on the head. And what did he hit? Honesty. That's what he talked about, you know. But if you hear it 5 times a week, it's just, it turns into blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And for some, it's like, you know, why do people in their 60s and 70s still listen to classic rock? It's what we grew up on. We liked it. We want to hear it again, right? You know, what did they hear at their first meetings? They heard that. They want to hear it again. It's a bedtime story. It's a warm blanket. It's, just this familiar audible thing that gives people comfort, I suppose. But I'm like you, I didn't grow up with it, and it doesn't come across as being contemporary or particularly helpful. Now, you and I have discussed, when will AA ever get around to writing a new book of original thought? Do they have to? Maybe if we went back to real back to basics, when it was just one alcoholic talking to another, maybe we can get by with grapevine stories. In 75, they wrote Came to Believe and Living Sober. And Living Sober sold over 7 million copies. So it's no, compared to the number of big books that have sold because of Joe and Charlie, I would say, because one of the things Jim might have been referring to is that in Bill's lifetime, we didn't sell 1 million big books. He never saw the millionth copy of the big book. Mm-hmm. But after he was dead and became canonized, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we went from 1 million to 2 million in just a few years. And then a few years later, it was 1 million every year, right? You know, Lois did okay on royalties on the big book. I think no one has an issue with that. And I suspect she wanted to give a lot of that money back to AA, but we wouldn't accept it from a non-alcoholic.
Yeah. Yeah, or an alcoholic these days, even. You know, there's a limit on how much money.
Yeah.
So what do we have? $5,000 a year, I think. I think it's $5,000 a year.
So is this an existential threat to us if we can't write a more contemporary version of Alcoholics Anonymous, or do a little future gazing here? We'll just close up with that.
Well, I don't know. It's a wickedly complicated question. I mean, it's wickedly complicated. And I've been through, over the last 6 or 7 years, I've been through a whole bunch of different ideas in my own head, you know, where if you asked me 7 years ago what I thought about this, I would be pretty militant that I've said at meetings, I said in presentations I've done, that if Alcoholics Anonymous gets to 2039 and there is not a new basic text written when our old text is 100 years old, I'm not saying get rid of the old one, keep the old one, but if we don't have a new text when Alcoholics Anonymous is 100 years old, then shame on Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, to some degree, I still think that's true, but I'm not saying that unless I'm prompted to give a historical recap like I'm doing here.
Yeah.
I was really gung-ho on the plain language thing, and I actually threw my hat in the ring to be the guy who was going to do the sample chapter for the plain language review that the Literature Committee of General Service Conference is doing right now. Mm-hmm. I was not selected for that, but that's okay. I really, after a while, I realized that I didn't really want to be a part of that project, because a plain language version of To Wives is going to be just as misogynistic as it is today, because it's just going to be more easily, the misogyny is going to be more easily read by a sixth grader than a college graduate. So, you know, I didn't want to be a part of that. I didn't know that when the thing first came up. It was one of those things, you know, you just gradually go through this. I lobbied that we should be able to write some kind of piece of literature. And I've a couple of times I've suggested the title, More Has Been Revealed. Now, of course, that's an AA cliche, but it's not what it says in the book. The book actually says more has been disclosed, but that doesn't, you know, and of course, there are people like you have pushed back on the word revealed, because that suggests some sort of from on high coming down. And I understand that too. So, you know, it's just, I would love to see a new piece of literature from this, but I do not see a viable pathway for producing a piece of literature that's going to be approved by the General Service Conference. I do not see that as being a possibility at all. I could say in my lifetime, but I'm going to be 80 in a couple of weeks, so that's not saying a lot. But I just don't see that happening in the next 50 years. I don't think we're going to do that. But then there's these moments of hope where, you know, they just did the God word thing. I mean, how long, you know, it was like 40, 50 years. This thing kept coming up and coming up. People asking for some sort of more liberal pamphlet on spirituality, the spiritual solution we're talking about. We need a spiritual awakening. Well, it's not just the Abrahamic God that's available for a spiritual awakening. And we needed a piece of literature for that. So we didn't get that piece of literature out of the General Service Conference. It was the people in England who did it. They did it, and they published it, and it circulated. And AA didn't blow up in England, and people didn't start going to the pubs en masse because of this pamphlet, you know? And what we basically did was adopt the English pamphlet. So maybe we need the people in England to come up with a 2039 book, you know? Or you guys in Canada. Oh, no, you guys are all stuck and you're all tied by the neck, by the noose of the American organization. You're part and parcel of it. But, you know, I mean, I don't know where it's going to come from, but it would be nice, very helpful for us to have something that would be a little bit more accessible and less offensive. Let's face it, we agnostics just blows a lot of people right out of the ballpark. They don't come back. They don't come back. Mm-hmm. And Two Wives blows a whole bunch of women and quite frankly, some men out of the ballpark, and they don't come back. It was like, I'm not going to go and sit and have people read that kind of crap to me at night. It's just not going to happen. So
a 1939 doctor's opinion, it concerns a lot of people too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and even in the employer thing, Hank talks about it's a spinal fluid problem. It's like, really? So we're going to put that in plain language. Oh, yeah. We're going to explain that spinal fluid problem in plain language. And there's a whole bunch of stuff. This is not to say that there isn't fabulous, fabulous information on how to get sober and how to stay sober in the big book. There's fabulous information right there. But I think most especially today, 2023, I think you need a guide. You need a sponsor who's been there, done that, and made peace with it in whatever fashion works for them, for in this case, that guy. And if he can explain it to you and it works for you, you mentioned earlier where Wilson was a pragmatist. We're all, AA is a pragmatic organization. What we're interested in is what works. I don't have any theological, any supernatural beliefs. I've got nothing. I've got mystery everywhere I turn in my life, but I don't have any supernatural explanations for those things. But I sponsor guys who are holy rollers. I mean, I sponsor guys who are teaching Bible classes and going to church twice on Sunday. And it's like, that's what's working for them. So yeah. I'm a pragmatist. I'm not going to try and get enough to come around to something that works for me, because it may not work for them. You know, my sponsor King, my Lord High Sponsor King, always said, you know, it was a pass-fail program. You know, you're either drinking or you're not drinking. It's pass-fail. So we're looking for whatever we can get you into the pass program. That's the deal. You know, we don't want you in the fail program.
For people who happen to be listening to this episode and just hearing you for the first time, can you tell us again where to find your YouTube page where they can get more of the brick-by-brick story?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. There's a YouTube channel called Bill Schaeberg, and if you just go to YouTube and put in Bill Schaeberg, it'll pop up. I've been doing things called Big Book History. Number one is on the first two forewords. Number two is on the doctor's opinion. And I've left enough numbers blank there that I can do each of the chapters all the way out. And I think it starts at 13 or 14. And there's a presentation on Hank Parkhurst. There's a presentation on the six-step myth. There's a presentation on a whole bunch of different stuff that I find interesting. And I'm going to continue to do that. I'm doing a presentation, Joe, for the AA Secular Convention coming up. And I was going to do a repeat of something, and didn't really ring my chimes. And I just decided yesterday morning I'm going to do a presentation called From Religious to Spiritual, A Historical Evolution. So if that comes out to be a decent presentation, we'll get that one up on YouTube. But I got to get that done by October 8th, which is the day I'm doing it for those people. So
yeah, that's right. So yeah, the clock's ticking on that. Yeah, I'm going to let you get back to that, and we'll link to all of those things for sure. But thanks again for sitting down with us. Time very well spent, my good friend.
Well, thank you for asking me. Always, always, always enjoy talking to you, no matter what's going on.
That was amazing. Thank you very much, Bill Schaeberg, and thanks for listening. So we are going out with music, as we always do on Rebellion Dogs Radio. This is a cover song from David Bowie's Ground Control to Major Tom by a band in Toronto called Goodnight Sunrise. This is Vanessa, keys and lyrics, David, guitar and lyrics, trading off on the vocals, and a real rockin' edition of the old psychedelic era song. So, if you're into new things in a new way, you're going to love this, or it might just make you love the other one better. We're going to have that song just after we wrap up with show notes. Thank you for listening. As mentioned, go to YouTube and search Bill Schaeberg, S-C-H-A-B-E-R-G, or it's youtube.com/@BillSchaeberg8911. We've got a link on our page, and that's got all of the YouTube stuff for writing the big book, The Creation of AA. Visit us at Rebellion Dogs Publishing online. You'll find show notes for this episode 74. There's more blogs, there's community resources. And, of course, offer any feedback you have on today's show or anything else. Thanks for being part of Rebellion Dogs Radio. Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. We'll be right back.
sure.